And were they able to establish those things in contracts?
Oh, I think so. Yes, yeah, they had a beautiful contract written up. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when you were president, do you remember which unions were organized into the office workers?
Well, the girls who worked in the Trades Council office, Bernadette Guthrow, and she still works in the Building Service Employees Union office. I talk with her on the phone, but she phones in through the switchboard every once in a while for the health and welfare plan. And the electrical workers. And I really can't remember. I remember the electrical workers because they were down town across from the bus depot, but most of the other ones were in the Trades Council building that was built, you know, during those years. And because I worked downtown, I didn't know any of the girls, or I didn't know the, I wasn't that familiar with the offices they worked in. So I can't really tell you how many, but there weren't too many anyway, and there were certainly very few as ever turned up for a meeting.
When your husband was working during the war, was he active in that training?
No, he wasn't active. He was a member of the Marine Workers, the same one that Bill Stewart, Barbara's husband, was with, but he wasn't active at all.
And did he support you working for a trade union? Is that
Well, we weren't really concerned with unions.
Right.
And I'm still not in some respects, you know. I mean, I certainly admire them and appreciate them, and I enjoy them, and I certainly enjoy this industry. But still not one of those real militant people. I'm not going to get out there on a picket line unless I really have to, and I'm not really going to make a big issue about things because I think that common sense is much better than picket lines.
Right.
I guess as much as people like to be unionized and all the rest, I'll take that back. I just think it's a good idea to be unionized. But as much as they want to preach unionism, then I will still say that I guess, like to be a capitalist in some respects because I enjoy the better things in life, and I enjoy taking nice long trips, and I enjoy having a nice apartment and all this type of thing. So I guess in some respects I want to earn enough that I can enjoy living. And through the unions, I guess we've been able to do that.
Right. Industry. Did the issue of childcare ever come up? Did you have
not
any women
too much
who
so.
Were married?
Oh, there certainly were, and it wasn't though a major concern. It seemed in those years back, it must have been, I'm sure, for some of the girls who were working and had children, but it didn't seem to be as much mention made of it, or I wasn't as aware of it anyway in those years back, that they didn't seem to make mention of it in the office, whereas today you hear a great deal of it. One thing that was great concern, and Emily Watts, when she was with the union, had the night order put into effect through the provincial government, and that was following a waitress being murdered down at English Bay, I believe it was. So then she, I remember one of the statements she made in the press printed it, that she'd go over and push the apartment buildings over if they didn't put some protection in for women working on those late shifts. And so then they put the night order in. It since has been written off the books many years back now, following the war. But I believe they had to provide transportation home, or the employee was not allowed to have shifts where she'd be required to leave the premises between the hours of 12 midnight and 6 in the morning, I think it was.
Were there many women who were active in the union?
Well, there was a fairly good group of them, and I don't know just how much of this information, and I don't want to dwell upon it because it's all past history, but that's what you're interested in, I suppose. But it was in 1947, the latter part of 47 or 48, early 48, I think it was, that the officers of Local 28 were deposed from office because of their political leanings. And so there were a group of people, their followers, as you might say, who were, were quite active. But following that, I would say there are very few of them are being known, one or two now, this with that Simon Fraser, you know, picket line, well, one or two of our people have been kind of showing up in that episode. But when they were deposed from office, that seemed to have eliminated any of the, you know, the real active ones. They kind of kept in the background after the officers were deposed and were, like international head office, and wouldn't give them, say, withdrawal cards, so they would never ever become a member again, and they would never be able to hold office again. So for that reason, well, Emily and May were the two who were deposed and were, you know, no longer then able to become active in the union in this industry.
Was that through the international?
Yes, an international officer put trusteeship in and took over the local.
Was that because of particular policies of the union, or?
Well, I think because of the views that they were trying to establish.
But did that have an effect, like, on the union's behavior or policy in any way?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I think that it was just they themselves who were... And I think it was a move in Canada at that time anyway,
sure,
to have the communist element,
the IWA,
removed from office. Yeah. And so our union, were purged, as you might say, too. So those were interesting days.
Did that have any effect on the union at all, in terms of those leadership?
Not really. No, I don't think so. Emily was a very strong girl and, very strong character, and she's a, great person. May, she was inclined, I like May. I mean, I'm not trying to be critical or catty or whatever the woman's saying might be right now. It's just that she didn't seem to be as forceful. And I would think that she probably hadn't had the same union upbringing as Emily, nor had she maybe the same education as Emily, that she wasn't just quite as competent and able to, put forth her views as Emily was.
When they were deposed, were there people in the union who left the union because of that? Which is one.
No, I don't think so. I think there was one member in particular. We brought other people to trial at that time too, and I think two or three of them were not expelled actually, but they were given the files are still here, but that's all so long ago now I've kind of forgotten, but I think they were given some type of suspension that they couldn't hold office again, like be executive board members or something of that nature.
Did the union affiliate with the CCF?
No, never.
No. Okay, so basically the union did not want to be affiliated with
any political
party.
No.
Okay.
And I would say that is still true as of today. And, I'm still on the executive board, and I would think that it's a viewpoint that, some of our top officers here are very much CCF and want, they love it. And one of our people here run for social credit riding at one time. So they all have their own political viewpoints, but they don't want the union in any way to be, connected up as being known to be a strong supporter of any or a supporter of any political party, to the point that we don't really appreciate too much for that reason the amounts of money that are spent through the labor organizations in the city that we're affiliated with, for political fields.
Right. Did the conflicts that went on within the union, in terms of between the communists and, I guess, other people in the union, did that have, repercussions within the membership at all, or was it mostly...
I don't think so. As I was saying a little earlier, Emily was a smart enough girl, but she was able to keep May under control. I think if, May, she would be... the one who would be the go-between and wasn't really astute enough about it. So with Emily being in control, she was able to try, I suppose, in her own way, to operate as they often do, in kind of a behind-the-scenes type of thing, but also getting their point through and across, because it was certainly established that they were trying to get people from our members, from some of the membership to join the party or something of that nature. But they didn't, in one way, they didn't come out and publicly make this known at membership meetings or anything. And they would ask me, you know, if I had any interest in Lenin or Marxism or something like that. And I said, well, not really. I said, I've read of it and read about their community, their farming or such things over there in Russia, but I said, I haven't really any great interest in it. And so they never bothered me about it. And at the time they were deposed, there was quite a fuss. But Emily, again, I guess she thought well enough of me that she phoned me at home and said, Daisy, I'd rather you wouldn't come to the office in the morning because I think there might be a little trouble or something like that. So, of course, they had been locked out, but they, in turn, had come through into the building again. And in our offices there, there was like an outside big room, and then the inside office was the little office where we worked. And so then when we got down there in the morning, well, there was quite a number of their supporters. Again, no one connected with our union, but then Jimmy Morrison was involved in that, and then Archie Johnston, who now is deceased, but he was the vice president from our international head office for all of Canada, and he was the one who was assigned to come in and take over the office and depose the two girls. So anyway, from that time on then, well, I worked out of the hotel room then, where they brought out the typewriter, and I just worked out of there. But as I say, Emily in her own way was, above it all. I mean, she was, I would say, very communist, but still was a great girl. But with May, she was more devious about things in the way I found her. And I would say that, I think it was quite a correct assumption on my part, from the carryings on.
In terms of the union's history, have there been any specific attempts to encourage women to get active within the union? Is there a fairly large female membership of the union?
Oh yes, there's a good majority of I would say the majority are. Well, not now that we're all one. See, I still refer back to those days when I was with just the service employees, or like the service part of the hotel, not the bartenders and the outlets. Whereas now, there's so many more waiters in the dining rooms than there used to be, and there's so many more, even to the point that we have chambermen now, that they're training them. We have our training center, and I was quite surprised because I had never been to countries where the men worked as chambermen, as you call them. And it was brought quite to my attention one day when a fellow came in looking for work. And so I said, well, we haven't anything but a chambermaid's job, and I'm sure you wouldn't want to be a chambermaid. And he said, well, why not? He said, certainly a custom in our country for men to work as chambermen. I don't know what they call them in their own language, but that's what we call them here anyway. So now we offer training for chamber persons. So now I would say there could be, a fair percentage of men over and above what there used to be.
Did the union try and get women involved with them?
Well, I don't know just how how you're thinking of them becoming involved. I mean, they always wanted them to become interested enough to attend meetings.
Right.
And Chris Waddell, following the time she worked at the aristocratic restaurants, and then when she came in to try to get the aristocratic organized, then and that's when she continued on following that. They were organized then, and that was a big victory for us. And so following that, well, she then continued working in the office rather than returning to her waitress work in the aristocratic. Mm-hmm. So she was involved in that respect, but there was no positions for them to hold.
Right.
Excuse me, except on the executive board, and we had just as many women on the executive board, I think, as men.
Did you have a steward structure?
Yes, at one time they had a fairly good steward structure going, and had meetings of the shop stewards, and had little booklets that our head office used to publish for them, and I think they still do. And they had a fairly good system working, but again, it would depend, I guess, a great deal on who their stewards would be as to how effective they could be. And even now, I think it's pretty well established that our business agents can't be fired, and so, if the shop steward is going to find it too difficult to settle a problem, well, it's much better that the business agent handle it. Where I think, like with some of the things you read in the newspapers, like the fellow working out in the logging camp or a fellow working in an electrical area, if something happens to them, well, they all walk off the job. Well, you won't find that in our industry. They just don't do that, and they wouldn't do it. And, of course, we wouldn't want them to either break our agreements. But, however, the fact remains that they're not that, you know, that strong little group that you find.
And there were women who were in the leadership of the union. Were those both elected and appointed positions?
All the positions are elected, and all the executive board positions are elected. I don't think there are any of them appointed, except, well, a business agent could be hired just as staff. They're not elected, the business agents. So
you've held both staff office and elected?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes. Okay. I've been on the executive board, and I was recording secretary for many years, like for Local 28, and then when Local 676 and 28 became 16, well, then I discontinued then as the recording secretary. And the same with Chris Waddell. She was appointed, as you might say, or hired or put on staff, and it was then following that that she would run for office and became, you know, an executive board member then.
Do you think that the responsibilities that, like, women waitresses and other workers had outside of their workplaces, like family and childcare, those kinds of things affected their ability to get active within the union or their desire to become active?
I don't think I'm qualified to answer, because I suppose personalities are such that if they're interested, they are, and if they're not, well, they're not. You know, with me, I would be a poor one to try to preach to anybody that they should become active if they don't wish to, because I don't think that they would. Mm-hmm. I don't think they would be genuinely actively or interested in being that way.
Right. Were there any issues or contract demands which women, in particular, kept raising more than, let's say, men? Anything that women tended to focus on?
I don't really think so, unless, as I think back, and only because I'm remembering the negative response to it, that when we would be negotiating the CPA contracts, which were federal negotiations at that time, one of the bones of contention were that the more sick leave that was given in an agreement, if we could establish a day or 2 days or whatever, that women were more inclined to take it. Now, I'm not suggesting that that would be true, but I'm only remembering that particular issue because of the negative response from the management area. I can't just particularly remember the women making any great push to have more days of sick pay, but they probably did, or probably the union negotiating committee, you know, when they were, because I didn't sit in on all the negotiations. I used to go up to some of them and take notes and minutes, but I didn't sit in on, you know, all of the negotiations. So it could very easily be when they were trying to get their demands together that they might have had people pushing more for those types of things. Mm-hmm. Glenn, he could tell you, he does our negotiations pretty much of all the negotiations right now, the one who comes at the office.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Did the men who were active in the union feel positively about women being active as well? Was there ever any discrimination at all?
I don't know whether you term it as discrimination, but I think that almost every day, I think this matter comes up, that I always say, well, there's more to a hotel than just the bar, you know, because it seems as though, you know, there's a certain group of people, they feel as though the chambermaids, I'll give you, for instance, that July the 1st holiday fell on Sunday, and you know, some of the men were, you know, really up in arms because of the fact that they thought Monday should be the premium paid day. But we said, no, July the 1st is July the 1st, and through our agreements that is the day, and that will be paid at the double time and a half. But they couldn't seem to understand that. And I said, well, yes, but you forget that we have a whole kitchen crew and the dining room staff and the desk clerks and the chambermaids. I said, you know, everybody, you know, thinks in terms of the bar only. So I think in that way, they're kind of pushed aside, and I shouldn't say it because I don't know, but I think that even our business agents who go into the hotels, they kind of forget too that there's chambermaids that would be interested to maybe air a little bit of a beef once in a while, but they, I think, find it a little difficult to talk to chambermaids about their duties. They're not interested too much in the women's housely affairs and, you know, the bedroom affairs or the cleaning under the bed, and whether they dust properly or whether they don't dust properly, because all these things the maids have to, you know, be very careful about, because, you know, the inspectresses go in or the housekeeper goes in after the chambermaid's been through the room, and if there's a feather or if there's a little bit of dust, well, you know, they can be criticized and given warning that they'll lose their jobs and all these types of things. But the men, I don't think, and rightfully so as far as I'm concerned anyway, they are not that concerned about a little bit of dust or a little bit of something that the chambermaid has to worry about.
Right. How about attitudes towards women officers in the union?
Well, I don't. We don't have any women officers, you see, so this way I guess I find it a little difficult. I don't think,
when
though, during the period of time, though, like when Chris Waddell was at the office, she wasn't actually the president or secretary, but the fact sort of means she was the only other one to work out around the hotel, the only business agent, and I was in the office, and then Al Morgan was our top boss at that time. And so she, in a sense, was accepted, I would say, just as readily, and could have been elected to the top offices very easily. So she was accepted very well. But following that, well, we haven't had any women officers at all.
Did the union ever have an auxiliary or any organization like that?
No, nothing whatsoever, nothing like that. They did get a credit union going at one time, but we eventually had to give that up, which we'd hoped it was certainly going to be a benefit to our members, but we found that it was too much of a burden for, well, first I was trying to manage the books of that as well as, you know, the office work, and then Chris tried to look after it, and it was pretty difficult to operate on the basis of trying to decide who would be able to get a loan, because, you know, some of them would turn sour and we wouldn't get the little payments made and so on and so on. So eventually, you know, that was discontinued. But other than that, we didn't have any other, like, outside things for the union.
Right. Is there any specific legislation, like minimum wage laws, that have been important to the union in establishing standards?
Well, I think the uniforms, for instance, that was one that was always helpful. And then I think the overtime, because at one time we didn't have the good overtime rates that we have today. And and I don't think the holiday, the annual holidays with Pay Act came in later on, but I think by that time we had pretty well established our own, you know, up to the standards. I can't recall now what other clauses are in the Minimum Wage Act. I'm trying to think back. See, I used to deal with all these things so much of the time, and now when I'm not doing it, well, I've kind of lost track of it all.
And when did the union establish training?
The training center?
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be, I guess, well, pardon me, we had a training for bartenders many years back. That would date back 676, like the beverage dispensers. They first operated. Then it was operated under the local joint executive board, which was a board of the three unions at that time, 835, 28, and 676. And they operated for a period of time. And it was just strictly the bartender training at that time. And in the past 4 or 5 years, they have a beautiful training center for a bar set up. We used to rent a hotel, you know, meeting room or something like that, and just put a portable bar in or something of that nature for training. But now they've got one of the most modern bars and beautiful, you know, lounge kind of an arrangement at the training center, 1945 East Hastings, and they have chambermaid training, and they have front office NCR training, and they just recently started waitress, waiter, banquet service training. And that, it's exceptionally nice, actually. If you're interested in anything of the on the line of training, it would be worth your time to make an appointment to see Mickey Ference. He's the director or the supervisor of the training center and the training classes, and he accomplishes a great deal. And through training our chamber persons, pretty well always we are able to get them placed in employment right away, which is most important. Right. And our housekeepers, and he does a lot of legwork, as you might say, by going out and talking with the housekeepers to promote the training classes so that they can be assured that they, you know, they during the summer months, particularly when they need extra staff, that they have someone Gwen who is, you know, familiar with being able to go ahead and do the work.
Does that mean that the union operates as a hiring hall?
Yes, we do have a dispatch office hiring hall. It's at the same address as the 1945 mm-hmm. as the training center.
Mm-hmm. And what is that? Do you think that's important in terms of the industry, in terms of the kinds of conditions that people face in the industry, that they can have some flexibility around changing jobs?
Yes, I think so, and I think that the members appreciate the fact that if yeah. they come out, you know, follow the work, that they can phone the dispatch office and hope to find employment. They can't always, can't guarantee employment, but well, and in our agreements at one time, especially the beverage dispensers, it was strictly through the dispatch office only. They could not hire for beer parlors or cocktail lounges after the cocktail lounge started. Mm-hmm. They couldn't hire unless they went through the dispatch office. And they had it really tied up tight. But with our service area, it was more difficult to try to find, it's always been established that a good waiter or a good waitress is never without employment. You know, they are always working. And in the summer months when tourist season, you know, is here and they demand so many more people to look after the tourists, well, it's almost impossible to find chamber persons or waiters or waitresses. So for that reason, if we can get people interested enough to leave their names with us, or desk clerks, mm-hmm. and especially if you get like these certain shifts, like a lot of girls are not interested or prepared to work the 4 to 12 shift, like say in some of those hotels, it's not just the nicest mm-hmm. spot to be working in, or the graveyard shift, but somebody has to work it. So it's not always easy to find people, and if they can leave their names and addresses, mm-hmm. you know, with the dispatch office. Well, it's helpful to the employer and it's helpful to the person too if we can help them in any way.
Great. Is there anything else that you can think of that you think is important?
I don't really know. Mumbling away here. I can't just remember the year, but this particular person who was then our top person, a lady, she was taken from office because of her conduct. And then she set up a local under the CLC and was reasonably successful for a little period of time. And however, it was nipped in the bud early enough that we were able to maintain our, you know, local 28 without a split in it. And while thinking about that split, I might then mention that a few years prior to that, local 244, who jointly organized all the hotel workers along with local 28 officers, they then at a latter date, and I can't recall the year, they more or less raided our industry and were very successful to pick up a good number of people. Mm-hmm. And so the government held a vote, and so in turn the Building Service Employees Union then held some of the hotels, but they have a number of smaller hotels like the Empress of Columbia, the Europe, and you know, a good number of the smaller ones. So that was two different episodes that were rather not the best for Local 28, and we did lose, as mm-hmm. you say, some members through that lateral rate. Mm-hmm.